Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Voices in Japan podcast with Ben and Burke. In today's episode, we talk a little bit about drinking and business culture in Japan, and Ben lets me vent some of my frustrations about how that affects productivity at the office. We also talk about the Rugby World Cup, which is still in full swing here in Japan, and Japan is doing very well, and actually Ben has some suspicions a little bit about the success that Japan has had recently, and it's pretty interesting to hear him talk about that. And we also talk about a very somber topic, which is funerals in Japan. Obviously, these are quite different than how they are in Western culture. It's based on Buddhist tradition, and we talk about that. We talk about some of the expenses that are involved with funerals. And we also talk about cremation, which is very rare in Western cultures, but it's very, very common in Japan. And for a Westerner who experiences and attends a cremation, it can be a very, very difficult experience. We actually recorded this episode while we were out on the town at one of the restaurants that we go to quite often, Kushidori or Yakitori, or meat on a stick or skewers. For people who are in Sapporo, they know this restaurant quite well. For people who have lived here before, it might be a little nostalgic to hear some of the background noise. And for people who have never been to Japan before, it might be interesting to hear the waiters and waitresses serving food and the other customers enjoying themselves. So we hope you enjoy the episode.
1,2,3
So, how's work?
It's funny you bring that up, man. Because, actually, now that we're out here drinking here, I was just thinking because of work, because Japan, like, has this whole thing about improving productivity at the company. But, like, man, my company, and I think a lot of Japanese companies, like, obviously drinking culture is a very important part of business, right? So the guys go out drinking, like, at least once a week, sometimes twice a week.
Including you?
Sometimes, but I do as much as possible to avoid going out for this specific reason that I'm about to mention. Because those guys, man, they go out and, man, they just, like, probably drink until, like, 4 or 5 in the morning. They're not young guys either.
On a weeknight?
Yeah. Most of them are, like, my age or older. And then obviously, like, the whole next day is just shot.
Yeah, right.
You know? Like, everybody comes in, their voices are like those hungover voices were like super deep. Like, half of them are trying to, like,
stinking just, the booze.
Yeah, exactly. Like, talking, like, smelling like alcohol. Like, some of them are just, like, struggling, like, not to rush to the bathroom, probably to, like, throw up or something. And I'm, like, just thinking about it. And if I haven't been out with them that night before, then I'm just sitting there thinking, like, man, this, like, whole meeting right now, like, nothing's getting done. Like, this whole morning, like, there's nothing's going to happen. Because everyone, like, to be honest, though, some of them are pretty impressive. Because they'll have been out the whole night, and, like, you won't even really notice, like, that it's affected them.
What about you? Do you join them? And, like, you stay out till, like, 5, 4 in the morning?
Whenever I join them, I always, like, use my family situation to take off. And I think actually it's easier for them because they want to, like, try to, you know, be, like, whenever, like, there's a foreigner there, they still feel like they got to make sure the foreigner's enjoying themselves or, like, have a conversation if I'm not completely joined. And I think part of it, too, maybe sometimes they don't want me to see, like, how crazy it can get, you know?
You didn't hold him back a little bit?
Well, but also, like, I don't know exactly all the places they go to, you know? And I don't know if they want me to know all the places they go to. So I'm also kind of thinking about them when I try to go home early sometimes, too, you know?
Mm.
But yeah, when I go out, I mean, I've always been pretty good. Like, I can function the next day and I can work really hard, but I mean, man, honestly, sometimes it's like a regular thing, like week after week, you know. And it's like, man, Japan, like, talks about improving productivity, but in reality, like, this whole culture, drinking culture, as part of, like, work culture, like, completely, like, ruins productivity at least, like, 1 or 2 days a week, you know.
And I mean, I don't think it'll ever change or anything because it's that way. But I don't know. It's been a little bit of something frustrating me recently.
Did the bosses ever say anything about that? Like when, you know, obviously workers come in smelling, obviously not being very productive. Like no one says anything.
Only if a person is like passed out of their desk.
Has to go that far.
Yeah. Then they're like, man, someone wake that guy up. You know. Right. That's only.
They don't get like a telling off or like a, you know.
No, it's completely opposite.
You shouldn't get so wasted.
No, it's completely opposite. It's like, when are we going to do that again? It's like, they kind of tease each other.
Also showing how dedicated they are to their jobs, like being able to go out, get that wasted, and then still come into work on time and to be able to be there rather than actually be productive. And it's like almost showing their faces.
It's that, but I think even more than that, it's like the traditional way of thinking about like your job is like, you know, company first, family second, private time third or whatever. If you're just like giving, and a lot of these guys are transferred, you know, to the city without their family, they're living by themselves. So it's like, you know, if you're going to be 100% a part of the company, then you're going to do everything that's, you know, a part of that as well, is going out with your bosses or your juniors or whatever.
So it's almost like that getting wasted part is a part of work.
Exactly, yeah. It's part of your, like, well, what we would consider, like, family culture, but for its work culture is even more important, yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you're 100% about it, then you're participating in all of it. And if you're not doing that, then everyone's like, how long can you really survive?
So yeah. Do you think these dudes next to us are doing exactly that?
I would think so, except for, like, I think the fact that they're here at Kushidori, instead of like, obviously the first place they go to isn't like some, you know, establishment or something, but it's kind of more of a very much more local place.
Like the first place.
Yeah. Or like a regular place they go to. Mm. And this is kind of more of a like chain restaurant a bit, you know. So yeah, and plus like, I don't see them slamming beers. You know? And that's the other thing. Like,
I guess it's still a bit early. It's like 8:30.
Well, it is. But when I've been out with them, like, they'll like basically like what was called like wet their beak with like a beer. But after that, it's like straight to shochu.
Really?
Or straight to Nihonshu.
They hit the strong stuff.
Yeah,
man, so they're out to get wasted. Basically.
Oh yeah. I mean, they're out to forget the night. Man. Like, it's crazy, man. Yeah.
Have you been like that before? Like, do you get to a point where you just like? Just really drunk.
Not with the guys in the company.
You try to hold back a bit.
Yeah, because I don't want. I mean, for better or for worse, I don't want them to look at me as a regular. Because then they're gonna be like, the more I like keep myself as a non-regular, they won't ever ask me. Or when they do ask me, like it'll be because like I have to go. You know?
Right. You don't want to be part of that group.
Yeah.
Again,
try to keep. And it's
smart, I think.
It is, but it's strange to sit, like, in the middle of all of them. So the next morning, like, I'm just hearing about everything that happened the night before, you know? It's pretty funny, man. It's pretty funny, but at the same time, I'm like, man, this is why nothing gets done.
Yeah. You're the only one working.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, should we even have this meeting right now? You know? So. Besides that... man, rugby is still going on.
Yeah. What was last week in Japan versus who they beat? Samoa.
Yeah.
That was an amazing game.
Yeah.
But then you think, right at the end, you know they were going for that fourth try to get the bonus point.
Yeah.
Then you think, like, that shouldn't have happened because Samoa had the ball. Time was already run out. Why didn't they just kick the ball out? You know what I mean? And then also, when it turned over, shouldn't the game have just ended?
Yeah, well, that's the
thing. They carried on playing.
I don't understand all the rules too much. So when it, like, all of a sudden Japan, like, Japan had a chance, and then, like, something happened where Samoa got the ball back, and it was, like, only, like, 2 minutes left. And then somehow, like, Japan all of a sudden got the ball back right there near the end of the field and stuff.
Right.
See, so, yeah, I don't know. I didn't think about it too much, but except for that, I was like, man, this is amazing. Are they really going to score?
Yeah.
Or score a try or whatever. Yeah. But so you're saying a little bit like it was a little bit something fishy?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, because also Samoa were losing by a lot. They could have just kicked the ball out and then the game would have finished.
But do you think, like, Samoa was doing it, or do you think the officials were doing it?
I think a bit of both. Like, oh, really? I think the officials were involved too, because when it turned over, I don't know why the game just didn't finish then. You know, where Samoa got the ball, then it should have just finished. Because I think the time was up by then. It was going into overtime. I'm not 100% sure.
Oh, yeah. Actually, time had expired.
Yeah,
for some reason.
So Japan were attacking.
Yeah.
Right. Time had expired, and then Samoa got the ball.
Yeah.
But time had expired, and then it changed over during that time.
Okay.
So I was thinking, as soon as it changed over, then the game should have been over. I
don't know. Why did they have, like, the extra chance to try and score a try?
Yeah. So I think maybe the officials were involved, and I'm not sure if Samoa gave them the ball.
But have you seen anything in the news about that?
No, I've just been talking to other people, actually.
And they've been saying the same thing?
Some of my friends.
Oh, really?
Suggested that, too.
Like, close rugby followers?
Not rugby followers, but just people who are into the World Cup. They're not, like... They're not big rugby fans, but they're into the World Cup.
Yeah.
So they kind of mentioned it when I was at work. And then I remember, like, I was talking to my mum back at home, and she said something about the Japan-Ireland game.
Okay.
So she reckons Ireland threw the game.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And also a lot of people around her thought the same thing.
No, man, don't say this, man. This is, like, ruining my, like...
Because Ireland, like, they were world number one at that point.
Yeah.
And then... And everyone that was watching was like, what the hell's going on? Ireland never play like this. But then, you know, who knows what can happen? It's a different country,
climate. I mean, but what would it take to get those teams to be, like, throwing the game or the refs? I mean, is somebody paying somebody off?
Yeah, maybe. But also because their group, Ireland... can qualify pretty easily.
Yeah.
Like, even if they lose to Japan, they'll still go through anyway. You know, they'll go through second or they'll go through top. Ireland already beat Scotland, which is the second strongest team in the group. So after that, then they play Japan. So it's almost like they can afford to lose one game, and then the other teams are going to be a walkover anyway.
But what is the situation right now? Is Japan already into the quarterfinals?
Yeah. And so are Ireland.
Man, I was looking at this like. Pollyanna situation. I was like, because when I was watching the game, man, I was like, this is. I'm starting to think this is even more exciting than like American football. Because
right.
Not only are they going to win the game, but there's this whole reason to like go crazy at the end of the game
to carry on watching it. Right?
Yeah.
Even though they're like stuffing Samoa.
Yeah, exactly. But now to find out that there might be like
I've ruined the whole World Cup for you.
Yeah, especially like your mom saying that about like Ireland throwing the game.
Well, I remember my mom said it because one of her friends is Irish, and he said it.
Oh, really?
So he said it to my mom.
Well, was he just saying it because he's like, there's no way Ireland would lose?
Yeah, I think he was saying because he's Irish. He's biased, of course. So then, then after what happened with Samoa, that got me thinking. Hold on a minute.
It's a little strange.
Maybe not. Probably not, but, you know.
All right, we're going to have to ask maybe Jamie about that.
Yeah.
See what he thinks about it.
But, like, I mean, you're not a huge rugby fan, right?
I'm
not a huge rugby fan either.
Yeah.
But since this World Cup has started, man, this World Cup has been awesome. Like, I've watched almost every game that's been televised, I've watched.
Yeah.
And they've all been, like, so exciting.
Yeah.
But then I asked my, like, Japanese friends... Man, none of them care at all.
Yeah, like a bunch of people at work like don't even know what's going on. So.
Yeah.
But then some people like are talking about it, and then like there's this one guy who played rugby in university in Japan, a Japanese guy.
One of your coworkers.
Yeah, so he gave a speech. Remember how I said like our company, like everyone takes a turn giving a speech in the morning? So he gave a speech on Saturday, and he said that like he cried.
He cried.
He went to both games as a Sapporo.
Oh, nice.
And he said he cried at both games.
Why did he cry?
Just because he was, like, just so touched to, like, see this, like... Because for him, it's like watching the Olympics, like, in person, you know, or something.
Yeah.
Or, like, you know... I mean, he grew up playing rugby, and then to, like, see, like, the World Cup of Rugby, like, right in front of him.
So he's the only one that you know is, like, really into it. The only Japanese person.
Plus a few other people I've sitting around me and I've been talking about, I'll say, like, and the Japan was doing so well. Everyone's kind of been talking about it just around in my area, you know. But, and he's that guy, if you said he cried, he said, like, every game he's watched with Japan, he's been crying. So Yeah.
Did you know that family travel has the incredible power to shape our children's worldview and create lasting memories? In a world where representation is often lacking, it's essential for our children to see themselves reflected in every aspect of life, including the stories we tell about travel. Introducing the Travel of Legacy podcast, where we're rewriting the script by celebrating the diverse voices of Black and Brown family travelers. Each episode of Travel of Legacy is a testament to the enriching power and the joy of exploration in Black and Brown communities. So journey with us and subscribe now.
Anyway, what are we talking about?
Well, the other thing is some people at work recently had to go attend a funeral, so it kind of reminded me about funerals in Japan. I've been to like a handful of funerals in Japan for relatives or for coworkers and stuff, and just remembered how different it is. Have you ever been to any funerals in Japan?
I've been to one funeral in Japan, but it wasn't a traditional Japanese style funeral. But because it was the only funeral I went to, I thought it was a traditional kind.
Okay.
But what it was they're not, the family weren't Shinto or Buddhist. So I don't think they had any kind of religion. So what they had, they hired out, I guess there's the funeral room, I don't know what you call that, where they have the casket with the person, right? So you can see their body.
Yeah.
So what this funeral was, they had the casket in the front of everyone, the main stage, and then it was just like all chairs around, like surrounding this casket, like lined up in rows.
Yeah.
And this funeral was for a student. She was a high school student.
Oh wow.
So she was really young.
Wow.
But yeah, it was so sad. So sad. So like all the students in her grade, they all came. Obviously all the teachers, the parents. And what we did, we just sat there, and then they would just play some music she liked. They would have like a screen and showing pictures of her, of when she was young, and kind of like, you know, when you have like the wedding reel.
Yeah.
It was like her life reel.
Yeah.
And that's it. And we just sat there. And for about, I guess it was about an hour. It felt like, probably about an hour. And no one really said anything. Like, there was no person giving any speeches or anything. And it was just people sitting there, listening to this music, thinking about her. And it was so sad, man. Like, everyone were just bawling their eyes out.
Man, that sounds rough.
Yeah, and I'd never been to one before. And I don't cry anything. And I was bawling my eyes out, man, because you know when you see like the video and you see her life from when she was a baby, and her parents were there and they were like crying, and then they had like all the things she achieved in her life like laid out in front of her, and then one by one everyone lined up and put like a rose into her casket, and then like said something like a personal message or something like that. So I thought that was a traditional wedding, but I was told after it wasn't.
Some of the things that happen sound pretty traditional, like especially at the end where they kind of all take a flower and put it in the casket. But that whole thing where like they're showing the video and stuff, I've never seen that.
Right, so I think that was unique. Like.
So there was like there was no Buddhist priest doing anything.
No.
Yeah, so that's one thing is like, I mean, just like you were saying, there's basically like the two religions in Japan, Shinto and Buddhism. And like Shinto is usually for all like the celebratory things like weddings, births, all these things where you're celebrating something, and then for like the funerals it's kind of like based on Buddhist tradition. So usually, well, there's 2 days. One is the wake, which they call the Utsuya, which is literally like the transition evening, and then that's where like a Buddhist monk will come and usually like read a sutra which is usually like a teaching of like the Buddha to his disciples and stuff. And but they'll have it basically in the same type of room, big room with the casket up front, with the person, a lot of flowers and everything. But they won't have like video, but they'll have like a photo of the person. And then the actual funeral is the next morning. And again, the Buddhist monk will come. And then after that, in Japan, they do the cremation of the body. And so that's how it finishes for that day.
Is that like those 2 days of the wake and the funeral?
Yeah, that's pretty standard, is what my understanding is. And I've been to many wakes, because usually they say if you're not family, then you either go to the wake or you go to the funeral. But you don't go to both. And maybe that has to do with because the family has to kind of give gifts in return to people who come to attend the funeral.
Because the guests pay, or like they give, donate some kind of money, right?
Yeah, they give the, I think it's called kodon or something, and that depends on like how close you were.
Yeah.
Some people say it ranges from like anywhere from like, you know, like $50 up to $300.
Yeah, yeah, I paid, 5,000 yen, which is like $50.
Yeah.
So the funeral I went to.
Speaking of which, have you heard anything about the money related to funerals and stuff?
Money related to funerals?
Yeah, money related to funerals. Obviously, funerals in Japan are quite expensive.
Yeah, well, I heard the funerals in Japan are the most expensive funerals in the world.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
In the world, wow.
Yeah. So the average, well, this figure was 2017, the average funeral cost was 1.4 million yen, which is what, $15,000, US dollars.
Yeah.
That was the average in 2017.
For all of Japan?
For all of Japan, yeah.
Okay. I've heard... Yeah, that
I heard it's going down. That figure's going down, though.
Well, I've heard they have like the less expensive versions now, just because. Yeah. So it's just like a few thousand dollars or something. But I've heard that, like, I don't know if it's just for Sapporo. I wouldn't expect so, because Sapporo's not an expensive place in Japan. But like funerals are usually like as much as weddings.
Yeah.
So they can be like up to $15,000 or even $20,000, $30,000.
And I've heard that they're kind of arranged like weddings now too. So they have these funeral companies where you could request specific items.
Yeah.
Like, we want these kind of flowers, we want this photo. And then they also itemize each kind of item that you want. Like a wedding.
Yeah, exactly. And within that, have you heard of the kaimyo? Do you know what the kaimyo is? So, that's the thing in like a Buddhist tradition or a Buddhist funeral, like the spirit leaves the body completely. So there's like no attachment to the body. You know, like in some religions, talk about they go to like the afterlife or something. But in Buddhist, it's all about separation of the spirit. And apparently, this like takes a total like 49 years or something. But anyways, that first part, separating the body, the spirit from the body, if you use the person's name, then the spirit will return. So they give a special name, and that's called the kaimyo. So you have heard about
that.
Yeah,
and that
costs, and you've heard about some of the scandal about
that. Right, that costs a lot of money, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, the more they pay, families pay, like the more elaborate kaimyo, special name that they'll receive. So there's a lot of controversy these days about, you know, funeral homes charging, trying to charge a lot.
Well, it's not, isn't it the temples that they're charging, or the shrines?
What?
Because it's the monks or the shrines that are giving the name.
Yeah. Oh, exactly, yeah. How much they're contributing to the, to the shrine. Yeah, or the temple.
And I heard, like, they can go up to, like, 1 million yen, like, choosing the name.
Oh, really? Yeah,
like,
I don't know how much.
$10,000.
Which is crazy, too. Yeah. Which is another interesting thing, because apparently, like, right after a funeral, you're not supposed to go directly home. You're supposed to go to, like, a very public place, like, go out to eat or go shopping or something, because otherwise the spirits will follow you back to your home and stuff.
Oh, so, like, directly after the funeral?
Yeah.
You're supposed to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Also, like, those days, the ceremony, there's the 7th and the 49th, like, when you get, like, a Buddhist monk that comes to the house to pray or chant, you also have to give them money.
Yeah.
And I heard there's no set fee of what you should give. So you're kind of supposed to give what you feel like you should give, which is obviously very hard for someone who hasn't experienced a death in their family before.
Yeah.
So my friend said, like, when her grandmother died, a monk came round, and I heard that the money can range from, and I'll write it down, it can range from, as a gift, from like 3,000 yen to 30,000 yen, depending on the circumstance. So if you're rich,
that's a big range.
Yeah, so if you're rich, you pay more money. So it depends on what, on your shrine that you belong to, or the temple you belong to.
Okay.
So the best thing to do is to ask advice from the monk of the temple you belong to on how much money you should present to the monk that comes around. Because it's basically, it's not a fee. Well, they don't call it a fee. They call it a gift that you give to the monk for their trouble for coming around. But they don't ask you for the money. Like, when they come around to your house, they don't say, okay, you got to give me this amount of money. You have to just prepare the money in advance and give it to them. And they're not going to complain how much you give them. So people always get confused, or they get anxious about how much they should give. So the advice they say is ask your temple beforehand so you know how much to give. Because then the temple knows how poor you are, how rich you are, how much money you have, how much you should give.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but it ranges from, 3,000 to 30,000. Could be even more if, like, you're super rich.
I mean, it's hard to make that decision because obviously you kind of want to do the best thing possible for the spirit and stuff.
You don't want to go cheap, right?
Yeah, you don't. Yeah,
even if, you just want to kind of, supposedly you're supposed to give what you can. That's the rule.
Yeah.
So if you're obviously rich, you can give more. If you're not so rich, you can give less.
Yeah. How about this thing in Japan where, like, obviously they do cremation, whereas...
Have you been to a cremation before?
Yeah, actually, I've only been to one. It was for a family member, a relative. And, that was... I mean, it was...
They're pretty intense, right?
It was. I think it was more intense for, like, some of the family members because, A, you kind of see the person... obviously when they're living, then you see them, after they've died in the casket, and then within a few hours. So what happens is, like, after the formal funeral service, everybody gets into a bus and you transfer to a different location, to a crematorium. They don't do the crematorium in the same place as the funeral house or the cremation. And then there's like a ceremony in the actual crematorium room where they're going to put the body into where it's cremated. And then it takes a certain amount of time to cremate the body, obviously. Anywhere from like apparently 30 minutes up to like 2 hours, depending on how old the person was. So during that period while you're waiting, everyone actually eats lunch. They have a bento.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Like a special
bento, yeah. But at, like, the... That's when I went. That's actually pretty good, because that's actually another thing that happens, is, like, because the night of the wake, everyone actually stays with the body that night, like the family members.
They sleep. They sleep with them, or stay over in
the same
room.
Well, there's, like, a big room where the wake takes place, and there's, like, a room connected to that, like a huge tatami room, and everyone just, like, drinks like crazy. It's like super wasted, like unbelievably wasted, and all the kids just like party and stuff. So it's like, I mean, part of it is because like all these family members haven't seen each other for so long, or the only time they see each other is like this type of
thing. So is it kind of like a happy time?
It's a super happy time.
Yeah.
And so that's one thing. So then also then during the cremation, like everybody's kind of eating, and you would kind of think like everyone would be in like a Western situation.
A Christian wedding.
Yeah.
A Christian funeral. Yeah.
Very similar, but I mean, you would think like, I mean, I think most people, I don't know, actually, I guess they do have like dinners at like funerals and stuff, but it's kind of like at this very somber location where the cremation is occurring and eating. I mean, you kind of think like everybody would be a little bit like quiet. Everyone's still kind of like talking. I don't think people are drinking really, but they're still talking and they're just acting normal. And then after that, you go into the room and do you want to...
Yeah, no, beer. Yeah. Do you want Nihonshu?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Atsukan. Hi. Choco Niko.
Hi. So yeah, everybody goes into the room, and then they do what's called Kotsuage, which is where they do the bone transfer.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
Yeah, and they put the bones and the ashes into an urn, and again, they start from like the feet, and they go up, and they have special chopsticks, and you pass, everybody stands around the body, and you pick up the chopsticks, and you pass them to the next person, and they put it into the urn. And that's, of course, the reason why you're never supposed to pass food or anything with chopsticks, because the only time you do that is when you're doing the ceremony of putting the ashes of the person and the bones into the body. But the thing is, like, after the body comes out, they, like, comment about how, like the family members will comment about how, like, clean, like, the bones are.
Wow.
Which basically means, like, the person was really healthy or not healthy, you know, and stuff. But, like, yeah, I've seen some people get, like, family members get, like, really uncomfortable in that situation because, you know, just, like, 2 hours ago they were seeing the body, or, like, a few weeks ago or whatever, they were seeing when the person was still alive. And then all of a sudden, yeah, they're, like, seeing this, like, ashes of the person.
How did you feel when you saw that?
Well, that was the thing. I was kind of with, like...
Oh, boy. This Japanese style sake pouring,
yeah.
I pour for Burke, Burke pours for me.
As we talk about this somber topic, the Japanese sake is very appropriate. Yeah, so when I was with the family members, like, some of them were kind of freaking out about it a little bit because they were, like, shocked to kind of see, like, the ashes of the person, like, right there.
Yeah, were they, like, crying or just in, like, being hysterical kind of thing?
No, they were kind of, like, freaked out by it. They were, like, a little bit taken back by it.
Was it the first time? Or is it just because it was that person?
I think for that person to react that way, it may have been their first time. But they were old. No, it couldn't have been the first time because they were older. Mm. They were an older person. I think it was just because it was somebody they were very close to. So that was a little, like, a little shocking.
Cheers.
Have you ever been to a Japanese graveyard?
No, I've been past them, but I've never, like, actually been into one.
Because, like, if you see a Japanese grave, obviously it has a person's name on it. But apparently now, if you go to graveyards these days, you'll see a lot of graves where the letters are in red. Do you have any guesses as to why the names would be in red? No guesses?
Red, okay.
Red, yeah.
Red means
on the grave.
They were a terrible person.
There's actually quite a bit of this red these days. So
they would mean something really bad.
That would mean there's, like, a lot of bad people. So.
All right. Red. Whatever.
I'll give you a hint. What else can you think of as red?
Blood.
Okay. So why is blood normally significant for a person?
Because it signifies that they're alive.
Exactly. So
if their name is written red, it kind of means they're still alive, but in their grave.
It's close. They're actually still alive. They're not dead.
Okay. Yeah.
So you'll see, like, these graves now with red.
All right, but how about this? Is the name on their grave the new name that the monk gave them? Or is it, like, their original name?
I think it's their original name. Because, again, I think that's where the person's resting. So, yeah. Two things that I know about this. One, for example, apparently it's kind of expensive to get engravings on your gravestone.
I bet, yeah.
So, like, for example, sometimes when the husband will pass away first, they'll put the wife's name on the gravestone at that point anyways, but they'll put it in red because the person is still alive.
Ah.
And then after they die, they'll take the red away.
So a lot of family graves have a bunch of names in red because they're still alive.
I don't know if it's like one gravestone will have many names. I think maybe it'll only have like two, like husband and wife. The other thing is because it's like becoming so crowded in these graveyards, many people are buying their gravestones and their space before they pass away.
Yeah.
But they'll have it in red until they actually pass away.
So they have a gravestone.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what it's like in America, but in England, people have bought their land, the area where they're going to be buried. But there's nothing there. It's just that they bought the space because otherwise someone else will take that space.
Yeah, but how soon do they buy it?
They would buy it as soon as possible. So, when my grandfather passed away, so he would have his plot of land where he's been buried, and then they pretty much bought the plot of land next to him for my grandma, even though she's still alive. So they'll buy it as soon as they know that someone is going to get buried in a place. They'll try and buy it around the same area.
Okay.
So that was 5 years ago. So my grandma has a grave plot for her for 5 years.
Oh, okay.
But she could live until, you know, God knows how long.
Much longer.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, I have seen that. Like, do you know that TV show Billions?
Yeah. I love that show. Yeah.
Do you remember the episode where Wags, the, like, second in command,
yeah,
bought his grave at the
yes, yeah, and he had to buy. He had to pay a lot of money for it
because somebody bought it before.
Yeah. Why did he?
I think he wanted in that graveyard because it was like somewhere specific in Manhattan. Obviously, space in Manhattan is very limited.
Pay like $1 million or something.
Yeah. So I guess it does happen. Yeah. But in Japan, yeah, they'll put it in red before that.
I have one question actually. You know, like the movie Departures.
Oh, awesome movie!
So that movie, so there's that few, like, basically the guy's job is to dress the dead for a funeral.
Yeah, which he didn't know he was applying for that job.
Does that still happen today? Like the funerals that you've been to, have you been to that kind of ceremony?
I've never been to that ceremony, and I've heard, I don't know if it's true, but just from what I've read, I think it's becoming less common. And I think
it's probably expensive as well.
It is, but I think the other thing is, like, I think that happens when the person passes away, like, at home, because then they'll come to the home and they'll do that ceremony where they prepare the body at home and everything. And but I think obviously with, like, elderly people going into, like, retirement homes and everything, or assisted living or whatever, I think, from what I understand, it's become less common now. But
so you've never seen it?
I've never seen that. I mean, that movie was an amazing movie.
Won the best movie at the Oscars.
Yeah, International or something? Yeah.
2011 maybe?
Something, yeah. I mean, I don't want to say I want to see that ceremony just because that's like, you know, you don't want to see somebody, you know, having that ceremony done for them. But that movie was really well done. And like the way he had to learn how to do that and everything. Yeah.
Did they show the cremation in that movie?
They did. I think
they did. I remember, yeah. But also, like, one of my friends told me that he went to one of those cremations from a family member. And they have to break the bones to make them fit into that.
Yeah, I saw that happen.
So it's one person's job. I don't know whose it is. Maybe the strongest person there or something, to, like, smash the bones out.
Yeah.
So that's got to be pretty intense.
Well, when I was at the cremation, they were doing that, and then somebody was asked to do it, and they couldn't really do it. It's not so much because they were, like, they didn't want to do it, but it was just like they didn't really know how to do it. And so the person at the crematorium, like, helped them out and did it for them. But yeah, that's a little disturbing too. Like, sit there smashing the bones in.
Right, so it's usually like a relative, like a son or an uncle, that smashes the bones up to fit into the urn.
Yeah.
I don't think I could do that.
Kind of wrapping it up here a little bit, but what's your feeling on when you have to leave this wonderful earth that we're on?
Dude, when I pass, I'm not even when I pass, before I pass, I want to just, like, jump off a cliff somewhere so my body just disappears. I don't want to have a funeral, because I don't want the burden of someone having to pay
and do that
for my body to get rid of my body. I'd just rather just disappear.
All the expenses?
Yeah, forget about it. And then I'll just leave a note saying, you know, I've committed suicide. don't have a funeral for me, don't spend all the money. Yeah, that's how I wanna go.
But don't, isn't that, I mean, some people,
I don't mind people having a party or anything, but yeah. I just don't want them to like spend loads of money on a funeral right. service when, if they, especially if they don't have the body, you know.
I've had that thought before too, but isn't that a little bit like, but what about for the people who want that very somber closure to deal with it on their own?
That's true, but you know, it's my body, right? It's my death. Yeah, I should be able to choose how I want to go,
you know? What if you actually, yeah, that'd be the ideal way to do it, on your own terms.
But I've heard of like people, because of that reason, like they don't want to burden their family with funeral costs, that literally they just disappear and they don't even tell their family where they've gone. So they've killed themselves, but they haven't told anyone. But because of that reason, the family never gets closure. So that's kind of it's probably not a very ideal way to do it, to leave your family hanging.
Yeah, you'd probably have to, like,
at least leave a note.
Talk your family into it over maybe from a younger age, so they kind of know that's what they got to expect.
Right, you got to, don't just pull a fast one suddenly.
Yeah. Well, what about if you had to choose between burial in the ground or cremation?
That I'm not too fussed about. Whatever's easier. I guess cremation is probably better for the environment, isn't it? Because it takes up less space.
Definitely takes up less space.
I mean, graves, if you get buried, it takes a lot of space.
Yeah.
So I think for environmental issues, I'd rather get cremated. Yeah. Or maybe not even, you know, get my ashes put into the ground. Maybe just get my ashes scattered into the ocean or something.
But wouldn't I think actually do that?
Throw it in the bin.
then, like, whenever anybody wants to come, like, pay their respects, they gotta go to that toilet.
Yeah, and then they'll get a good laugh out of it, you know.
Like, man, it was really nice knowing you. And by the way, I got to use the bathroom, so don't mind me.
Taking a dump on my head.
Well, on that much lighter note, and maybe we could wrap this one up a bit.
So. Yeah, let's wrap it up.
Yeah, it was a good time. Any final words?
If you'd like to support the show, please leave us a donation. Also now, before, we had a donation link that you can only be a PayPal member, but now I figured it out that you can be a PayPal member or not. So you can pay by credit card directly by clicking on the new link. So if you'd like to support the podcast, send a donation with your credit card if you're not a PayPal member. And do the usual like, save, share, review. Apple Podcasts, right?
Yeah. That's the place now to do it. It's changed a bit, yeah.
So please do that. And have to catch you next time, guys.
Thanks.
Cheers.